It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
This attack, by the way, not a surprise to U.S. authorities. They fully expected bases in Iraq might be targeted, and they took defensive actions. And as you mentioned, no American casualties, but Iran's supreme leader still talking tough, saying he slapped America in the face, and now the focus shifts to the White House. Again, then we know there were 15 ballistic missiles fired from Iran overnight at two military bases used by U.S. forces. One missile hit a base in Erbil in northern Iraq. Four missiles failed in flight. The other 10 struck al-Assad, a huge sprawling facility visited by the president last Christmas, a base from which coalition forces often launch drone attacks. In Iran, people celebrated in the streets, waving flags and chanting, "Down with the USA and down with Israel." We haven't seen video of any damages at the bases, but we are seeing shrapnel from one of the failed missiles, which landed in a field about 30 miles outside Erbil. After the strikes, the Iranian foreign minister tweeted, "Iran took and concluded proportionate measures in self-defense under Article 51 of UN Charter, targeting base from which cowardly armed attack against our citizens and senior officials were launched. We do not seek escalation or war, but will defend ourselves against any aggression." If the U.S. retaliates, Iran warns it'll hit more targets, possibly here in Israel, where Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke earlier, saying, "He who shall strike at us will face a deadly blow." Meanwhile, Iran dealing with some other major issues today. There was a plane crash in Tehran this morning that killed nearly 180 people on board. And there were also multiple earthquakes in Iran today, one of them near a nuclear power plant. Guys.
All right. So that's Rick Leventhal on Fox this morning. Honestly, this is stunning news. So stay with me. I want to try to lay this out. What Rick Leventhal just packed into that brief report, by the way, he's one of my favorite reporters at Fox. He does such a great job. But what happened was we were waiting for them, Iran, to retaliate from the killing of Soleimani. And I told you that yesterday morning. It was after the third day of mourning and the, when they marched the streets, millions of them, you know, weeping and wailing over Soleimani. We're not sure if they did it voluntarily or if they were forced to do that. And so this was the big response last night. The problem for them is it wasn't a big response at all. No one was hurt. It was not the airbase closest to Tehran, where more American servicemen are assigned. It was two relatively, I don't want to say innocuous, but much less deadly, potentially, targets than the other airbase. So the other base, they knew what they were doing. This was their, like, they felt compelled to respond. They felt like they had to get revenge because they bluster and they boast, they beat their chest, they yell death to America, and they have to save face. And so that was their saving of face. And so it's interesting to me, actually, to hear their words in response. And CNN did a good job. They had one of their guests, actually, one of their reporters on the scene, actually relay in English what the response of the Iranians was. And I'd like for you to hear it. Here it is, clip three.
We've gotten the full statement by the IRGC. Now, we've heard, of course, Aaron, before that on state TV here, you had banners sort of outlining part of the message from the Revolutionary Guard Corps, which has, of course, said that it is behind these ballistic missiles that have been fired at these U.S. bases. Again, they, in the title of the statement, say they pledge hard revenge, as they call it, for Qasem Soleimani's death. And it's been so interesting, Aaron, because over the past couple of days, as we've been at the funeral procession for Qasem Soleimani, there were so many people there who had placards that simply had two words on them, hard revenge or harsh revenge. So this seems to be something that's been building up, that the Iranian power center has been building up for, to almost label this operation, this revenge operation, as they call it, and just call it hard revenge. Now, there's 4 points that the Revolutionary Guard makes there. They say to the great Satan, obviously referencing the United States, saying that the slaughterous American regime is warned not to repeat its wickedness. Essentially what the Iranians are saying there, Aaron, and I think this is something that's key, because the senior advisor to the Supreme Leader told me the same thing as well. They are saying that this is their retaliation, and they want it to end there. They don't want America to strike back, and they said, and they're essentially saying that they don't want this to turn into a larger war. And that doesn't necessarily mean that this is going to be the only retaliation, or this is going to be the only strikes that we're going to see. But the Iranians are essentially warning President Trump and the U.S. not to continue and escalate the situation any further.
They're, I'm going to interrupt him, because basically, no, I would say it this way. They are saying, please don't attack us anymore. We had to respond because, you know, that's the way the game is played, and we had to save face. So we responded. We didn't kill anyone. We're just now assessing all the damage. I think President Trump tweeted something in the early morning hours, all is well. So whatever that means, he's supposed to speak to the nation this morning. But here's the thing. They did. It was really a puny response. That's the truth. Don't tell them I said that, because now they'll have to conjure up another response. And then they're saying blatantly, the CNN reporter put it as they're warning us not to attack again. No, basically they're saying, please don't attack us again. This is it. I think they mean this is it. That's what I think. Now, the Iran Supreme Leader, remember, there's like two factions. There's sort of the democratic, well, it's not democratic at all, but there's the president of Iran, which is one faction. That's not really the way to say it. They're not factions. They're separate entities. And the Supreme Leader is really the guy in charge, and he's the one who is the, he's the cleric. He's the one who whips people into a frenzy about Islam and talks about the 12th Imam and all of that. And his response to this was, he called that missile strike at bases a slap in the face, and publicly says it's not enough. Of course, he's encouraging his people to do more damage to the United States, but evidently whoever's in charge over there didn't do that. So I'm just telling you, my personal opinion is that unless we strike again, this is going to be it. That was their big boasting and beating of their breasts. Now, this is interesting. Rick mentioned this at the end of his report, but at the same time, now let me give some background here. You know that we have instilled some very harsh sanctions against Iran. We've withdrawn from the Iranian agreement, so-called agreement, and we have instilled very harsh sanctions because of their nuclear development and because of their behavior as terrorists. They are the largest sponsor of terror in the globe, the country of Iran, and under the leadership of Soleimani. So we have reduced them, their economy. They've been desperate. And that's one of the reasons they've been lashing out. I think they hoped that we would give them money to stop, because that's what we always do, right? President Obama gave them tons of money, $150 billion when they signed the agreement, and then sent them, you know, in the dead of night, $1.5 billion on, you know, these crates in various forms of cash, just, you know, patting them on the head. I think Obama was honestly trying to help them. That's what I think, because that's what he did while he was president of the United States. He constantly helped the Islamic world. He gave his first major speech as president in the Islamic world. Remember that? But that's beside the point. Let's just say they got tons of cash, and it's worked well for them. It's been like North Korea. They do something horrible. They you know, rattled their sabers. They threaten, and then the West and Europe says, please don't kill us. Here's some cash. And that's the way it's been working for a long time, until Donald Trump. And Donald Trump has a different, he has common sense, which is probably what most middle Americans share with him, and that's why we support him. And so he said, no more, this is ridiculous. Ted Cruz said last night that we are, and I've said this too, you've heard me say this, that money that Barack Obama made sure Iran had, no doubt funded all of this terrorism and came back to kill Americans and maim them. It's just horrendous what we've been doing. Absolutely horrendous. So Iran last night is dealing with their economy shrinking. They've had people marching in the streets against the Ayatollahs and the leadership, in spite of the wicked, horrendous things they've done to the dissenters, putting them in prison, shooting them with snipers, all kinds of things. And so they have turmoil within their country. And let me say again, I think the reason they've been lashing out at us is that they were hoping for some money in exchange for, you know, getting them to stop hurting us. And if you'd leave it to Hollywood, I guess I should skip to Michael Moore for a second. For instance, Michael Moore sort of expresses not as eloquently because he's not a diplomat, you know, but this is exactly how the European Union feels. This is how the past presidents have felt, except for Ronald Reagan. And he wrote an email to, or no, I guess it was a tweet to the, I'm not sure, to the leaders of Iran, whoever they may be, whoever he considers them to be. And he said, "Sir, I deeply regret the violence on behalf of, by a man that most Americans have never voted for. Avoid power, a sincere man, Michael Moore, an American citizen." And of course, then we had Rose McGowan. I read this to you yesterday. "Dear Iran, the USA has disrespected your country, your flag, your people. 52% of us humbly apologize. We want peace with your nation. We are being held hostage by a terrorist regime. We do not know how to escape. Please do not kill us." So this is basically what Michael Moore said, too. You know, "Please don't do any acts of violence. You know, please don't do that. Let us vote him out of office." And so they're begging. And of course, if they had their way and they were in the European Union or Barack Obama's administration, they would send cash. And that's how they would solve this problem. And when you hear all of the pundits on the left opining today about, well, they're going to have to be, they're probably going to be silenced to some degree, but they'll think of some criticism. This is an amazing development because I really do think Iran is done. Now, that's my opinion, but I want to go back to last night. You got the Iranian regime dealing with people marching in the street, their economy contracting. And at the same time last night, I think this is amazing. And it once again makes me think that God is hearing the prayers of his people. I'll tell you why. Because now this is, that sounds cruel given what I'm going to say to you, but I'm talking about the world as God sees it, not as I see it. A tragedy happened last night, just minutes, while this event was being carried off by Iran, these missiles being fired on bases in Iraq, a Ukrainian passenger jet carrying 176 people crashed just minutes after taking off at the Iranian airport. 176 people. They landed, they crashed into a field just outside Tehran. And so this by itself would be a huge story. So while they're aiming missiles in Iraq to kill, well, no, I don't think to kill Americans. If they had wanted to, I think they would have done it preen as though they're doing something. They've got this Ukrainian plane going down in their country and having to deal with the complications and difficulties of all of that. And as though that weren't enough, you probably heard Rick Leventhal say Iran was hit last night with multiple earthquakes. Now, no one can do that. You know, no human being has the capacity to do something like that. And all of those things on the same night, I just think that's, and you know, the Iranians are religious. Now, religious means rules set around by men. It's rituals, it's clothing, it's bowing this way or that, saying certain things. And Western Christians can be religious, and Muslims can be religious, following the rules of man. I don't equate that with actually serving God in a personal way. So the Iranian people are religious. They believe in a God. And so I think that when they see that, the airplane crashing, and when they see or hear the earthquakes, I would imagine it speaks volumes to them, too, about what's happening. So I'm not sure what signs they'll take from it, but they believe in the supernatural. So I think I think we may be past the problem. Now, the president will speak, I'm sure exactly when, but supposedly this morning, and maybe even, I don't think he's spoken yet. I'm looking at the television, I see a commercial, so I don't know if he's spoken yet or not, but maybe you can tell me. Maybe some of you have your televisions on in the background. If you see him come on, you might give us a heads up, because I'm talking to you, not watching TV. So this is Sandy Rios, and by the way, I have a lot more to tell you. A lot of news last night. It just never stops coming. More news on Lieutenant General Flynn, more news on impeachment, and so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat is coming fast, and we still have a few spaces left.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat is coming to Pine Cove Camp near Tyler, Texas, March 31st through April the 2nd. The retreat is 3 days of relaxation and encouragement for pastors and their wives. It's a chance to address the challenges which are unique to a pastor's family. Pastor Bert Harper of Exploring the Word on AFR and his wife Jan will host the event. Our special speaker will be Dan Celia of Financial Issues, and it happens midweek, so you won't even need to miss a Sunday service. Materials, meals, and lodging are included in the cost of registration. But hurry, space is limited to just 30 couples. Learn more and register at repairingthefoundations.net. That's repairingthefoundations.net. Or call 662-844-5036, extension 300.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat.
We'll see you there.
The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Such comfort. And yet, can you imagine having never read those words for yourself? Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, and we've been engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years for $5 a Bible. You know, there are Christians in Asia, Africa, Europe, Latin America, and the Middle East who've never held a Bible in their own hands because of corrupt governments that oppress, majority religions that persecute, and other conditions related to living remotely and in extreme poverty. Some of these new believers, they memorize long stretches of Scripture, while others cherish the Word they heard preached on Sunday until they can gather again. They long for God's Word to hold in their hands and to cherish in their hearts as they grow in His grace and knowledge. Details on how you can be involved are at sendbiblesnow.com. That's sendbiblesnow.com or by calling Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and folks, Liberty University believes a private Christian education should be affordable to everyone. That's great, right? It doesn't matter if you're from California or Maine or anywhere in between, you may qualify for up to $20,780 over 4 years through Liberty's Middle America Scholarship. For more information, text MAS to the number 839-858 today. Again, that's MAS to the number 839-858. In Seattle, Washington, a businesswoman faces outrage after she mocked a 9-year-old girl who died in a tragic hunting accident. The woman called the child a MAGA-billy. 1.5 less MAGA-billies in the world. That's what she said. George Lopez, the Hollywood comedian, offered to help pay the bounty the Iranians had placed on President Trump's head. And Albert Hainsworth, a former professional football player, encouraged the Iranians to target the White House. He went so far as to draw a red circle around 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue so the terrorist would know which building to attack. There are many who would simply dismiss such rantings, but I believe we should take every single word and meme and joke at face value. This is not about Trump derangement syndrome. This is about depravity and evil. That's not a political problem. That's a spiritual problem. Be sure to download my free daily podcast with special guest Oliver North and Franklin Graham, only at toddstarnes.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Obviously, about what's happened in the last few days with Iran. You know, I think one of the questions is, obviously, you have this country that is a sovereign nation, but in many ways a bad actor. Would you go about, if you were president, trying to de-escalate the current situation with Iran?
Well, you know, the first job of the president of the United States is to keep America safe. And this president has gone in exactly the opposite direction. And he started in 3 years ago when he tore up the Iran nuclear deal that Iran had agreed not to advance its nuclear program. Our allies wanted America to stay in it, but instead Donald Trump tore it up. And he's just had a series of escalating attacks. And now with the killing of Soleimani, we're in a place where we've stopped our actions against ISIS. We now have a president who is tweeting threats of war crimes. We've had to pull all of the Americans out of the area, all the civilians. This is not making America safer. And what it's really doing, and we really have to talk about this, this is moving us closer to the very edge of war. Americans don't want a war with Iran. And this is the moment. Americans need to speak up loudly and say, no more war in the Middle East. It's time to have peace in the Middle East. We need to get out of this.
That could be your next president, you know, if you're lucky. That's Elizabeth Warren. It reminds me, have you ever dealt with a bully? I bet you have. And even if it wasn't a physical altercation, did you ever kind of understand that if you go, oh, please don't hurt me, don't hurt me, don't hurt me, don't hurt me, don't hit me, don't do anything. I'll do that. How does that work out? How does that work out? I'm just wondering, how does that work out? Do you find, you have peace, you know? But you go to school if you're a kid, scared all day and leaving class as soon as you can, walking home fast. You're afraid you're going to be, you know, picked on, assaulted. That's just one example. You know, many of you having bullies in your workplace. And generally speaking, in the vernacular, a bully needs a good bop on the nose. That's the only thing that stops them. And so Elizabeth Warren, of course, is, you know, we're on the brink of war. This president, of course, she's a liar and she twists everything. That's an aside and a given. But at the end of it, she's claiming that now we are less safe. But you know what? I kind of think we're not less safe. I think Iran is going to stop hitting Americans worldwide. I think they got their nose bopped. They got their commander taken or their terrorist leader taken out. I have a feeling their behavior is going to be different. That's kind of what I think, based on human nature, which really has not changed since the dawn of time. Interesting, Fred Lucas has an article in the Daily Signal titled Toxic Politics Complicate President's Obligation to Notify Congress. So it's the president, according, I think, to the War Powers Act, has to notify Congress within, I think it's, sorry, you don't see the numbers in front of me, but it's like 48 hours, something like that, after he's ordered something. He has to, according to the War Powers Resolution, he is supposed to let them know. But he doesn't have to have their consent. He is the commander-in-chief, and he can strike if there is danger. Ironically, of course, Fred Lucas's point is that because the Congress is so divided, and just for instance, I'll mention one person, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, who's normally a person that a president would notify, is guess who? Well, let's think about it. It's Adam Schiff. So you think the president's going to pick up the phone and tell Adam Schiff what he's going to do in advance? Really? You think he's going to, like, tell the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi? Really? And so the hostility and the really the overt desire to undermine the country and its the rule of order and the standard practices to sort of create upheaval that we've seen from the left have made it really impossible for him to operate in a normal way. It's not illegal what he has done at all. Even though that's what the left is going to try to prove. And then, of course, they want to make the case that this is a fail, that he failed, he's gotten us into war. And it's just in 24 hours, I think, honestly, I think tensions have been released. Now, I may be wrong about that. I'm just telling you what I think. If I ever have a word from God, I'll make sure you know it's from him. I do listen to him, and I think that he has given wisdom. He gives wisdom to all people who ask. You ask for wisdom, he gives it liberally to those that ask. There's no question about that, but that's a very different thing than God actually speaking to you. But this is my perspective on it. So I have a clip, but I don't think I have time to play it. Joe Biden, back in 1995, does this big blustery speech. It's almost 2 minutes long, where he advocates for the War Powers Act to be expanded so that presidents can have more freedom to respond to terrorist actions against the United States. And so in 1996, it was Joe Biden who was all over that. And now you hear Joe Biden, of course, accusing the president of doing things that are not safe. And we know how that goes. It's not just, of course, politicians who are criticizing the president. Mike Morrell, who was the former acting CIA director under Obama, tweeted, "There will be dead Americans as a result of the Soleimani killing." That's his tweet. But someone else weighed in response to this. His name is Mark Augustine. And Mark is the former deputy CIA director who served with Mike Morrell. And this is what he had to say. "Mr. Morrell, I worked for you while you were acting director, managing one of your stations. We all gathered around the TV in the break room to watch you lie to Congress about Benghazi. I just wanted you to know that we all know what you did. So God bless Mark Augustine, and that's the kind of hypocrisy that we are seeing all over the place. Oh, by the way, I'll mention one more story before I play this next clip. There is an article. This comes from 2013. It's in the Huffington Post, and it's pointing out that in a brand new book then, a book by Mark Halperin and Joel Helaman, who are the authors of Double Down Game Change 2012, Obama made a comment while discussing drone strikes. I'm going to go over here and I'm going to read it from the book. You have to know that Obama created this targeted CIA killing program. Do you remember that? The Bureau of Investigative Journalism estimated he killed between 2,528 and 3,648 individuals in Pakistan since 2004. That's what the targeted killing program had done. And President Obama beefed it up. And so in the wake of that, now again, this article was written in 2013. This is the part from the book that's relevant. Obama didn't need to run through this preamble. Everyone knew the litany of his achievements. Foremost on that day with the fresh news about Al-Awlaki, it seemed the president was pondering the drone program that he had expanded so dramatically with such lethal results, as well as the death of bin Laden, which was still resonating worldwide months later. Turns out, this is a quote from Barack Obama, turns out I'm really good at killing people. Didn't know that was going to be a strong suit of mine. So that's what the book said. And, of course, nobody complained about that. Nobody on the left, nobody complained, I don't think, about Osama bin Laden being taken out. I don't believe I heard that from the media. And so it's interesting to hear this montage by Newsbusters about how the media is again still reporting on the killing of Soleimani. Let's listen, clip 10.
Here we are in the assassination business again.
Do you think that the assassination, as you put it, of General Soleimani was against international law?
Is there a new deviancy in the American culture that we now support murder, killing of political leaders?
Millions of Iranians mourn the death of Qasem Soleimani today. A stunning show of solidarity.
The supreme leader of Iran weeping and praying over a coffin draped in the Iraqi flag.
He was such a legendary figure, raised not only in terms of what he actually did, but mythologically.
Suggesting the world is a safer place this morning, you would be hard-pressed to find people in this region who buy this.
To assassinate him, do they think that's going to make us safer?
One reckless act by the American president.
Did the president make a major mistake?
Do you believe there was an imminent threat from Iran?
Do we have reason to trust what this administration says?
Prove it.
Donald Trump still has no idea how much this is going to dial up conflict in the Middle East.
Did he just make a decision to keep himself alive politically that put us and our families at mortal risk?
Our troops will be put in danger because of the vanity of Donald Trump.
This is a massive escalation.
An irreversible path to all-out war with Iran.
Blood will be spilled, American blood, because of it.
This is what happens when you have a president who proudly goes with his gut, leaving the government scrambling to retrofit with no clear policy objectives.
So they say. Of course, they would know. I'm sure the president calls these media personalities, Wolf Blitzer and the rest of them, Morning Joe, and tells them exactly what he has planned. They would know this, you see. Of course, they don't know this. And they did not talk about this way when Osama bin Laden was killed. Obama was a hero. Why, he was a hero. He personally went in and killed Osama. It you know, the Navy SEALs had some part in it, but it was Barack Obama who did that. And he was a champion to them. Not so with this president. And so they're projecting, or they are predicting outright failure. And this is going to put us closer to war. I don't think so. I think they're going to be proven wrong and quickly, which, again, is it just seems like God to me, honestly. Now, I'm not saying that. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that Donald Trump is perfect and God is using him and protecting Donald Trump. I think that God is listening to the prayers of his people. And he does things in ways, he sends earthquakes. He allows things to happen that change and shift the world and the notion of it. So I just think we've experienced a stunning past 12 hours or so. I really do. Now, this really got to me. I want to say to you, when I was in D.C. right after 9/11 of 2001, that's when I first went to D.C. as president of Concerned Women for America. I was on CNN I don't know what part of the year, but it was in 2002, the early part of it. So it just been a few months since the strike had taken place. And the stunning thing to me was that the title of our debate, and I can't even remember who I was on with, probably Tucker Carlson, was that the American Education Association, the NEA, National Education Association, was implementing curriculum, already writing and getting into schools curriculum to tell our kids, oh, no, don't be, I don't know if they'd coined the phrase Islamophobic yet. They were working on it. But no, how, you know, there's another side to this story. No, now don't get angry with anyone who's, don't get angry, don't lash out. Because that's bigoted. You can't do that, and on and on and on. And they had such success with that that, you know, now many American schools, like in California, kids are learning the Quran. They're learning to recite the prayer that makes you Muslim. It's just this one little phrase, a couple of sentences, and you can be Muslim too. And the prayer rugs, all kinds of things in public schools. You can't have Bibles, but you can convert to Islam or at least go through the motions of it in some public schools in America. So they were very successful. But let me go back to that early 2002. I was shocked. I couldn't quite – it made me angry, but I never knew. I never – the extent to which propaganda in this country had taken hold, I knew some of it, but I had no idea how powerful and how successful they would be. And so this really – disturbs me. And the title is this: Time Magazine publishes guide on how to talk to your kids about Iran. Already, Time Magazine published a piece Monday instructing parents on the best ways to talk to your kids about the situation with Iran. Qasem Soleimani was a top military leader in Iran, a country in the Middle East, the curriculum says. Time instructs parents to answer a series of questions, including, why did the U.S. take action against Soleimani? And their answer, President Donald Trump has called Soleimani a terrorist. Trump says Soleimani ordered attacks on American military and diplomats and was planning attacks against Americans in the Middle East. So hang on just a second. Donald Trump says that, but, you know, can't really be true. Or is it true? It's just Donald Trump saying that. There's no way to verify that Soleimani was a terrorist. There's no way that other people know, that our intelligence knows, that he ordered attacks on American military since 1998 when he took charge. Really, we don't know that. Just President Trump says it, okay? And then they go on. President Trump, Time wrote, had several options to retaliate, but saying, the Time piece says, to your kids, that the most extreme of those actions would be to take out Soleimani. That's an additional point you need to bring up to your kids, says Time. Iran's reaction in the Times curriculum has been mournful. It's been mournful. That's what the Time curriculum says to your children. In addition to answering pressing questions about the optics of the attack, the publication discussed the possible fear that current events may instill in your children and spoke to psychologist Paul Coleman for further insight. Coleman encouraged parents to use a tool called SAFE. Search for hidden questions or fears. Act. Keep routines going. Feel feelings. Ease minds. Oh, boy. So now we get to raise another generation of snowflakes who are so concerned about having to fight for their country that the Selective Service website crashed on Monday because students who were signing up for student loans were having to answer questions for, you know, the potential draft. You know, so now we're going to create more ill-informed cowards. Really, I don't know how else to say it. Because above all else, you know, I can remember that the left doesn't really, for the most part, believe in anything beyond this life. And that's why they're so afraid to lose theirs. And the Christians have a different view. We believe that there is a life beyond, that there's life itself is eternal, and that this is temporary. And so no greater love, Jesus said, has man than this, that a man laid down his life for his friend, for his country, to save his children. That's our code. It's very different from the left, who want to save their skin at all costs. I'll be back with more in a second. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
For nothing is hidden that will not become evident, nor anything secret that will not be known and come to light. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. MSNBC's Chris Hayes invited Texas Congressman Al Green onto his program to defend himself against Republican accusations that Democrats reverse-engineered impeachment by searching for a set of facts to fit an impeachment narrative. Instead of refuting that accusation, Green confirmed its accuracy. Congressman Green said, "Well, the genesis of impeachment, to be very candid with you, was when the president was running for office." Well, thank you, Congressman Green, for confirming what we already knew. This sham is nothing more than an effort to overturn the will of the American people.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Christian parents are on the hook today because they have to identify the threats to the value system that's being taught to their children in public schools. And their job is to protect their kids from these influences.
Tune in for Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson, weekdays at 6:30 a.m. and 9:30 p.m. on American Family Radio.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to our program. God's blessings to you all.
Bishop E.W. Jackson.
A lot of people have become convinced that somehow America is an evil nation, a racist nation, an oppressive nation, a sexist nation, blah, 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 blah.
The Awakening.
I say God bless America and thank God for America because the whole world is a better place because America exists.
Weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
We're all that we claim to be as a nation and more.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. One of the hidden horrors of homosexuality is male-on-male sexual assault, which is now reaching epidemic proportions in the military since homosexuals have been able to openly serve. According to the Department of Defense, 7,500 male soldiers were sexually assaulted in 2018, up by 38% over the last 2 years. And because males are reluctant to admit they've been assaulted, the problem is actually far worse. It's likely that homosexual rape is now responsible for 42% of the overall victims of sexual assault in the military. It is so damaging that the military now believes that sexual assault might be more likely to cause PTSD than combat. When the Bible says it is an abomination for a man to lie with a male as with a woman, it knows exactly what it's talking about.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The day after President Trump eliminated Qasem Soleimani, the world's most dangerous terrorist, China announced that it was putting an official with a self-described record of, quote, cleaning up the political ecology, unquote, on the mainland in charge of its operations in Hong Kong. Luo Wenning's installation seemed sudden, perhaps to exploit the United States' preoccupation with the aftermath of Soleimani's killing. Whatever its motivation, entrusting the Hong Kong portfolio at this sensitive time to someone with no background in the territory, but a record as a thuggish enforcer of Xi Jinping's diktats, is ominous. While we are understandably focused at last on the fact that Iran is at war with our country, and has been for 4 decades especially, the 22-year Soleimani ran Tehran's jihadist operations, we must be prepared to hold China accountable should it crack down on Hong Kong. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
That's the whole world today is worried about social media.
Yeah, I mean, they are not really acting like leaders of this country. I mean, talking about the business community and things like people who have a real stake in this country, they've disappeared, as Ed says. They're afraid. They're afraid of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Twitter account. I mean, they're afraid of the woke armies that will assail their products and boycott their companies. They're hiding.
Yet we've seen in the Republican Party great unity behind this president, great strength in his leadership. It is a shame that this country, which has is benefiting so much from this president's leadership, does not understand their obligations to the leader who is making it possible for all of us.
The bottom line is he's going to continue to do what he's going to do because he believes in it, and we need to be supportive of it.
Yeah.
That was Lou Dobbs and his guests, and he's right about that. I think one of the most distressing things, first couple points from that, they point out that business leaders have become cowards as well. They're afraid of social media, so it's not just kids, it's not our children, it's like an epidemic in our country of the lack of moral courage. I think part of it is that we are just so indulged. Man, it's hard to give up our favorite drink from Starbucks, or for me, Diet Coke at McDonald's. It's hard to give that up, so, you know, I'm willing to cave pretty easily. Just withhold my Diet Coke. I'll pick on myself for a second. And so, but I have to say, remember this, that courage breeds courage. And I am encouraged. If that makes any sense at all, I see America kind of waking up. Now, I don't know if we're going to wake up enough. I don't know. But I see more and more people understanding and kind of digging down deep and getting a little bit upset and beginning to have an opinion and beginning to really actually do something, even sacrifice of their personal time to make a difference. And so I'm the optimist on this because I just believe that God is hearing the prayers of his people. Now, we'll see how this develops. Now, another story that happened yesterday that was very, very, very distressing and got lost in the attack by the Iranians on our air bases or our bases in Iraq. And so it has to do with Lieutenant General Flynn. I'll let Fox tell you the story, then I'll weigh in. Here it is.
A reversal from their previous position, prosecutors at the Justice Department now say Michael Flynn deserves up to 6 months in jail, laying out that case in a sentencing memo to a federal judge. Flynn, President Trump's former national security advisor, pleaded guilty in December 2017 to lying to investigators as part of the special counsel's Russia investigation. A sentencing hearing a year later was postponed after Flynn offered to continue cooperating with the special counsel. Prosecutors had credited Flynn for that cooperation, but now say he has retreated from his acceptance of responsibility. On Capitol Hill, Jared Halpern, Fox News.
All right, this is terrible news, I have to say. This is coming now from the Justice Department. Remember that the judge, Emmett Sullivan, just a month or six weeks ago, I talked to you about the article that I was sharing. Okay, Sidney Powell is General Flynn's new attorney. We've talked about this so much, but it is so complicated that I have to be careful that I make it as clear as I can in a very complex situation. Sidney Powell has come in the last 6 months, 9 months, to defend General Flynn, and she's been doing an incredible job. And the judge is Emmett Sullivan, who has in the past shown some fairness, but has been particularly harsh to General Flynn. In fact, I shared with you an article, Inside Information, that Emmett Sullivan is, according to someone in Washington who's an insider, has accepted some position that's being funded to some organization funded by George Soros. And so people are saying, why the sudden change? Why is he so harsh? Why is he not responding to Sidney Powell's very reasonable request for information on how the prosecution has so mishandled and mistreated General Flynn? And yet Judge Sullivan has not responded to that. And he's supposed to sentence General Flynn on January the 28th. Okay, so now the Justice Department, that's a different entity than the judge, Emmett Sullivan, has sort of weighed in. And I'm going to give you, as best I can, again, without telling you everything, because then you would get drowned in all the information. In December of 2018, the Justice Department declared in writing that General Flynn had provided substantial assistance to them. When Bob Mueller was conducting his expensive, worthless investigation, General Flynn cooperated with him. He gave, I think, 32 hours. He spent that much time with him, incredible amounts of time. But now they declared yesterday that General Flynn has not substantially assisted the government. Now, what's going on there? They say in their statement that General Flynn has refused to accept responsibility for his actions. I want to read to you a Twitter thread that kind of gives an overview. So it's written by William Chamberlain. I don't know William's bio, I'm sorry, I don't, but I think he's probably a Justice Department attorney or someone who's an attorney in the D.C. area. He says, today the DOJ filed its new sentencing memorandum in General Flynn's criminal case where he has pled guilty. Remember General Flynn, this is me talking, General Flynn pled guilty to one count of lying to the FBI. And you also will remember that one of those agents that he was allegedly lied to was Peter Strzok, and the other agent whose name escapes me in this moment. But both of them said when they got back from the interview, which was a setup by James Comey to try to entrap General Flynn. Remember that part? But they both said, the agents, that they thought General Flynn was being perfectly honest. So According to Sidney Powell and General Flynn, the FBI threatened him that if he did not plead guilty, this one count, they would come after his son. And they had already bankrupted him. He had had to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars. He had to sell his home. And so that was the reason he agreed to plead guilty to this one count of lying to the FBI. Okay, so back to Will Chamberlain's Twitter thread. The DOJ has changed its mind and decided that Flynn did not provide, quote, substantial assistance, end quote, to prosecutors and wants a prison sentence of 0 to 6 months. Why is DOJ mad? Well, they were prosecuting General Flynn's former business partner at the Flynn Intelligence Group for various federal crimes. Rafikian is the Turkish guy that was his partner for a while. He was convicted by the jury, but the judge threw out the conviction for lack of evidence. And Chamberlain says, embarrassing. The prosecutors argued that Flynn's shop did some lobbying PR work at the Turkish government's behest. The judge noted that at trial, the prosecutors presented zero evidence that the Turkish government was involved. Strange, right? Seems like an important point to prove. And there's another weird point. General Flynn was perfectly happy to testify to the Turkish government's involvement. That was the substance of his substantial cooperation with the government, and it was revealed in his grand jury testimony. Despite this, General Flynn was never called to testify in the Rafikian trial, and then the prosecutors lost, precisely because they didn't have General Flynn's testimony. So why didn't they call General Flynn? Well, the prosecutors accused General Flynn of changing his story about Flynn Intelligence Group's FARA filings. This is getting in the weeds. Let me just say that you're supposed to, there's a big deal now. It wasn't enforced very much before, but it was now after the guy that went to prison that was with President Trump's team early on, Manafort. The FARA is the foreign, it's when you have an actual a professional agreement with a foreign power to represent them in D.C. You have to file this FARA filing. Excuse me. But it was very confusing in the past, and most entities did not bother with it. So they came after General Flynn on that issue, and the law firm that was representing him at the time told him it wasn't necessary. He had filed some other form. He didn't need to do that. Turns out those attorneys are the ones that were defending, quote-unquote, defending him to Emmett Sullivan before Sidney Powell came on. And when they were defending him, the truth of the matter was it was their firm who gave General Flynn bad advice. They were the reason for this. And that's why General Flynn ended up firing them about 6 months ago, and Sidney Powell ended up taking over the case. It was just botched, botched, botched every way you can look. Now, let me go back to Chamberlain's telling of this, because he actually writes the clearest, believe it or not, telling of this. Well, the prosecutors accused General Flynn of changing his story about Flynn Intelligence Group's FARA filings. Because he changed his story, prosecutors argue they had to make a rational, strategic decision not to have him testify. This makes no sense. So they decided not to have him testify against his partner, who was Turkish. And now they're blaming him that they failed the case because they didn't call him to testify. So William Chamberlain says it this way. Nonsense. As explained in her briefing and proved with contemporaneous notes, it was the prosecutors who were demanding a changed story. Flynn did not plead to knowingly lying in the FARA statement, yet prosecutors demanded he testify to the contrary. It goes on and on. I'm not going to go any more in the details, because I know I probably already lost you. But they are accusing General Flynn of undermining their prosecution of his partner. And Chamberlain says it's time to put this charade to end. Federal prosecutors have been railroading a respected general for years. Enough. President Trump, pardon Michael Flynn. And I want to go back. Boy, I echo that. And I want to go back just to give you a little bit more background so that you can remember this. This is an article that came out February 2017. We've discussed this a lot. I recognize, but it's time to revisit this. It's titled Former Obama Officials and Loyalists Waged Secret Campaign to Oust General Flynn. This is by Adam Credo. I think it's Washington Beacon. It is. Free Beacon. The abrupt resignation Monday evening of White House National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Remember, this is back in 2017, just a few weeks after the president was inaugurated. The abrupt resignation is the culmination of a secret, months-long campaign by former Obama administration confidants to handicap President Donald Trump's national security apparatus and preserve the nuclear deal with Iran. The effort, said to include former Obama administration advisor Ben Rhodes, the architect of a separate White House effort to create what he described as a pro-Iran echo chamber, included a small task force of Obama loyalists who deluged media outlets with stories aimed at eroding Flynn's credibility. The operation primarily focused on discrediting Flynn, an opponent of the Iran nuclear deal, in order to handicap the Trump administration's efforts to disclose secret details of the nuclear deal with Iran that had been long hidden by the Obama administration. Insiders familiar with the anti-Flynn campaign told the Free Beacon that these Obama loyalists plotted in the months before Trump's inauguration to establish a set of roadblocks before Trump's national security team, which includes several prominent opponents of diplomacy with Iran. And he talked about the sources requested anonymity. It's undeniable that the campaign to discredit Flynn was well underway before Inauguration Day, with a very troublesome and politicized series of leaks designed to undermine him. This pattern reminds me of the lead-up to the Iran deal and probably features the same cast of characters. We will put that on our Facebook page. It's an older piece, February the 14th of 2017, just to remind people why this is interesting that this should happen when we're in this this conflict with Iran has come to a head in this last week. And so it was General Flynn they targeted because they know he was against the Iran deal. He was a hardliner against Iran. And let me just add one more thing. Who else has lied to the FBI and is, doing just fine as far as I can tell? He's a CNN contributor. That would be Andrew McCabe, who in the Inspector General's report, we now know, admitted that he lied to the FBI about leaking to the Wall Street Journal. He actually apologized to them in the interview. But nobody's bringing any charges against Andrew McCabe for really lying to the FBI and on a big thing. He leaked he was the assistant, actually acting director of the FBI for a while, and he leaked insider classified information to the Wall Street Journal. That's a very big deal. And he told the FBI he didn't, and now he's saying, oh, I guess I did, and I'm sorry. But he's doing fine, you see. And General Flynn now off to prison if Emmett Sullivan follows through, and I'm sure he will, based on what we're learning more about him. How disappointing. How disgusting and disappointing. And so January the 28th, the sentencing will take place. There are a couple of other stories I want to share with you before we say goodbye today. This is a good story. This is a good story. This is justice. Remember Nick Sandman, that 16-year-old boy at the White House who was there for the March for Life a year ago, and how the Native American came up and got in his face pounding a drum, and Nick just stood and kind of smiled, and he was accused of smirking and mocking the American Indian. How dare he do that? And it spread like wildfire. People thought he was terrible. His hometown came after him. They had him take him out of school. Well, CNN was one of the worst in covering this and in really twisting the truth about this. So what happened? Nick Sandman has filed a lawsuit against CNN, also against Washington Post and NBC Universal. And CNN settled with Nick Sandman yesterday. We don't know how much it is. They are going after the Washington Post. They're going after, Gannett, the owner of the Inquirer. They're going after Phillips, the American Indian who harassed Nick Sandman and lied about what was actually taking place. But Nick has won that case. And by the way, the attorney says for Sandman that the money they're seeking is not designed to compensate Nick, but to deter the defendants from doing the same thing that they're accused of in the future. God bless them for doing that. And thank goodness for a just outcome on that. All right, so fasten your seatbelts. Every 24 hours brings major news. The president will speak this morning. I know you won't want to miss it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.